Two aircraft, same altitude, neither on the radio, converging on the same point in the sky, maybe a half mile apart, maybe less. Who moves? If your answer was the one on the left yields to the one on the right, you are mostly right, but mostly right in a converging aircraft scenario is not a comfortable margin to work with. And if you answered whoever doesn't have right-of-way moves, you just described why this regulation deserves more than the 20 minutes most students give it before the written test. I'm Pattern. This is Traffic Pattern on Radio Hangar. And today, we are going to actually read Federal Aviation Regulation 9113 together, the right-of-way rules, not the version you crammed for the knowledge test, the actual regulation. Because what most pilots think they know and what the rule actually says are often two different things, and that gap matters more than people realize. Before we get into it, a quick thank you to our friends at aviationsoul.com. If you're working toward your certificate, or you already have it, and want to mark the milestones that actually matter to a pilot, Aviation Soul makes challenge coins for every step of the journey. First solo private certificate, instrument commercial. They've got the whole progression covered. Check them out at aviationsoul.com. Now, let's get into this. Federal Aviation Regulation 9113 opens with a sentence that sets the foundation for every encounter you will ever have in visual conditions. Here's what it says. When weather conditions permit, regardless of whether an operation is conducted under instrument flight rules or visual flight rules, vigilance shall be maintained by each person operating an aircraft so as to see and avoid other aircraft. See and avoid, two words. And those two words place the responsibility for collision avoidance on you. The pilot in command, not ATC, not your traffic display, not a traffic advisory you just received, you, the person looking out the window, but see and avoid, only works as a system when both pilots know what to do with what they see. That is where the priority hierarchy comes in. The latter, the specific order of who yields to whom, and in what situation. Most pilots learn pieces of this. They know on converging aircraft, you yield to the right. Some remember that gliders have right-of-way overpowered aircraft, but very few can recite the full ladder in order and explain why it is structured the way it is. Let's walk through this together, from the top down. At the very top of the priority ladder, aircraft in distress. An aircraft that has declared an emergency has right-of-way over everything else in the sky. No argument, no exception. If someone is declaring mayday, get out of the way and let them work the problem. Second priority, balloons. A free balloon has essentially zero lateral maneuverability. The pilot can ascend or descend by managing heat and ballast, but going left or right. That is the wind's decision. The regulation puts balloons near the top precisely because of what they cannot do. Everyone else can maneuver, the balloon mostly cannot. Third, gliders. A glider has no engine. Once a glider is committed to a glide path or a final approach, it does not have the energy reserves to climb away from a conflict the way a powered airplane does. A glider is always flying an energy management equation, and that equation cannot be interrupted without consequences. So powered aircraft yield to gliders. Here is something I find myself saying to students when we get to this part. The priority ladder is not about status, it is about capability. The aircraft that can move most easily is expected to move. The aircraft with the fewest options gets protected first. Once you understand that principle, the whole ladder makes sense without having to memorize it as a list. Fourth on the ladder, airships, blimps, dirigibles, large, slow, limited maneuverability compared to a fixed-wing airplane. They yield to balloons and gliders. Powered aircraft yield to them. Fifth, aircraft towing or refueling other aircraft. This one surprises students every time. Think about what a tow operation looks like. A tug aircraft in front. Behind it, maybe 200 or 300 feet of cable, sometimes more on the end of that cable. A glider or a banner. The whole train moves together. The tow pilot has reduced performance, limited climb rate, and cannot maneuver sharply without losing the tow. The object on the end of the cable follows. It does not have a choice.
When you encounter a tow operation, you're not just yielding to the airplane you can see. You're giving clearance to the entire train, including whatever is trailing behind it, that may not be immediately obvious. Sixth and last on the priority ladder, powered aircraft. That is us, the Cessna 172, the Piper Cherokee, the Diamond, the Cirrus. We have engines, we have energy reserves, we have options. When we encounter any aircraft higher on that ladder, we move, now. That is the vertical hierarchy based on aircraft category. But the regulation also gives us rules for specific encounter geometries, the actual situations you will face in the air. Let's start with landing, because the traffic pattern is where most conflicts happen for student pilots. An aircraft on final approach or in the act of landing has right-of-way over aircraft in flight, landing, or on the ground. If you are established on final, traffic not yet on final yields to you. Aircraft on the ground yield to aircraft landing. When two aircraft are both approaching to land, the one at the lower altitude has the right-of-way. But then the regulation adds a sentence I want you to really hear. You may not take advantage of this rule to cut in front of an aircraft that is already established on final approach, or to overtake that aircraft. The lower altitude rule is not a weapon. You do not get to swoop in below someone who is already on final and claim priority. First come, first served is the spirit of the rule. The lower altitude tiebreaker applies when both aircraft arrive at the approach situation at roughly the same time, and you need a way to sequence. It is not an invitation to force your way into the pattern. Now, the converging encounter. The most common situation you will face in uncontrolled airspace. When two aircraft of the same category are converging at approximately the same altitude except head-on, the aircraft that has the other on its right shall give way. Read that carefully. The one that has the other aircraft on its right gives way, which means the aircraft to the right has the right-of-way. When I am flying and I see traffic converging from my right, I need to yield. When traffic is converging from my left, they need to yield to me. But here's the practical reality. I cannot sit there and wait to see if the rules will be followed. I have to assess the situation early, decide what is happening, and act. The converging rule applies when both aircraft are the same category. When they are different categories, you go back to the hierarchy. A Cessna 172 converging with a glider. The Cessna moves. Does not matter which side the glider is on. Powered aircraft yield to gliders. Period. Head-on encounter. Two aircraft approaching each other approximately head-on at the same altitude. Neither one has the right of way. The regulation says both aircraft shall alter course to the right. Both. Turn. Right. This creates the maximum lateral separation between the two aircraft, and it is the same instinct that works on a two-lane road when someone crosses the center line. Move. Right. Get off the collision path. The word approximately is doing some work in this regulation. What exactly counts as head-on? There is judgment involved. And here is the practical guidance I give every student. If you're uncertain whether your situation is a head-on or a converging encounter, treat it as head-on. Turn right. The conservative call when you're not sure is both aircraft turn right. Overtaking. You are coming up behind another aircraft. You are faster. You are closing. The overtaking aircraft alters course to the right. You pass to the right side of the aircraft. You are overtaking. This matters for two reasons. First, the aircraft ahead of you cannot easily see what is directly behind it. If you pass on the right, you move into their peripheral vision as you go by, which at least gives them a chance to see you. Second, passing to the right is predictable. The other pilot, if they know the rules, expects you to pass on the right. Predictability is the whole point of having rules in the first place. Two strangers in separate airplanes can share the same piece of sky without ever talking to each other, as long as they are both following the same playbook. Now, I want to spend time on something that does not get nearly enough discussion in ground school. You have the right of way. The other aircraft should be yielding. They are not. What do you do? Federal Aviation Regulation 91.413 answers this directly. The right-of-way rules do not relieve a pilot who has the right-of-way of the responsibility of taking whatever action is best calculated to avert a collision. Your right-of-way does not protect you if you fly into another aircraft. Being technically correct in a mid-air collision is not a useful outcome. The regulation requires you to take action even when you're the one who should have been yielded to. This is not just a legal technicality, it reflects the reality of the sky. The other pilot may not see you, they may have misidentified the geometry of the encounter. They may have fixated on something inside the cockpit at the wrong moment. Whatever the reason, if you can see the conflict developing, you act. You do not wait to see if the rules will be followed. The National Transportation Safety Board publishes accident reports on mid-air collisions, and a recurring theme in those reports is exactly this. Pilots who had the legal right-of-way and relied on that protection rather than taking early evasive action. The rule tells you who should move first. It does not guarantee that they will. And then the regulation adds one final line that does not get enough attention. No person may operate an aircraft so close to another aircraft as to create a collision hazard, full stop. Even if you are legally in the right, you cannot operate so close to another aircraft that you create a hazard. The regulation does not reward being technically correct while being practically dangerous. The sky is shared space, and the rule acknowledges that. Let me talk about ATC for a moment, because there is a misconception that can get pilots in trouble. When you're operating in Class Delta, Class Charlie, or Class Bravo airspace, and you are in contact with ATC, the controller is providing a service. They may issue traffic advisories, they may issue instructions to sequence you, but an ATC clearance does not cancel your obligation to see and avoid. A clearance to land does not mean the pattern is empty. A sequence instruction does not mean the airspace between you and the runway is sterile. Controllers are managing a radar picture that may not include every aircraft, especially VFR traffic in the pattern that has not yet been identified on radar. Your job every time is to look out the window and verify that what ATC is telling you is consistent with what you actually see. Now let's talk about what this looks like on a check ride, because the airman certification standards for the private pilot certificate are specific here. The examiner is watching whether you scan effectively for traffic, whether you apply right-of-way rules correctly when traffic appears, whether you sequence yourself appropriately at non-towered airports. Knowing the rules verbally is table stakes, demonstrating that you apply them consistently while also flying the airplane, talking on the radio, and managing the descent. That is what the examiner is actually evaluating. Here is something I wish someone had told me when I was training. The scan matters as much as the rule. You cannot apply right-of-way principles to traffic you have not spotted. The FAA recommends a systematic scanning technique, moving your eyes in short, regular intervals across different segments of the windshield and side windows, pausing briefly at each sector to allow your eyes to focus. The eyes do not detect motion well in peripheral vision during continuous movement. You have to stop, look, then move to the next sector. High-wing versus low-wing aircraft create blind spots in different places, turns create blind spots. Before turning in the pattern, look in the direction of the turn. Before descending on final, scan for traffic on a straight in. The rules tell you what to do when you see traffic. The scan is how you see it in the first place. Regulation 9113 is about two things that have to work together. The hierarchy tells you who yields. The see and avoid mandate tells you to keep looking, so the hierarchy actually gets applied before you need it. The FAA's Aeronautical Information Manual has a dedicated section on mid-air collision avoidance that goes deeper on scanning technique and traffic pattern operations. The Airplane Flying Handbook covers it as well. Both are worth reading not for the knowledge test, but because the information in them actually keeps you alive. Find us at radiohangar.com. I'm Pattern. Keep your eyes outside.